Chapter 18. Putting Yourself in Other People's Shoes. In this chapter, empathizing with other people. Understanding how your words and actions affect others. Overriding defensiveness. Practicing positive actions. If you have BPD, your relationships with friends have probably been tumultuous, chaotic, and unsatisfying. Intimate relationships have likely been downright disastrous. Chapter 8 reviews some of the core reasons lying behind these difficulties. We encourage you to listen to that chapter before this one if you feel ready to work on improving your relationships. Good relationships have countless benefits for people in general. Research shows that people with supportive social networks have better physical and mental health, as well as longer lives. In fact, having people to talk to also seems to protect against early memory loss. With so many natural benefits, building better relationships should be an important part of your plan to overcome BPD. In this chapter, we detail the foundational importance of understanding the perspectives of other people, and we show you how to do so using a few key strategies. We also show you how to better understand how your emotions and behaviors affect other people. Then we discuss how to recognize and minimize defensiveness when relating with others. Finally, we introduce you to a few of our favorite interpersonal skills that can help you create better relationships with friends, family, coworkers, and even strangers. Understanding others' points of view. The most pivotal interpersonal skill of all is the ability to understand that although other people, like you, do have thoughts, opinions, and emotions, those thoughts, opinions, and emotions aren't always concordant with yours. When you fail to grasp where others are coming from, you run a high risk of offending, disrespecting, hurting, or annoying them. You may also bore people by running on about your own issues and failing to notice the cues that tell you it's time to connect with whomever you're talking to. This interpersonal skill involves both understanding that other people have independent thoughts and feelings and appreciating that other people have various motivations and intentions that they don't always state openly and explicitly. Being able to understand the perspectives and mindsets of other people allows you to do the following. Empathize with other people. Make sense of what others do. Change your behavior in response to how others respond. Predict how other people are likely to respond to you. Understand nuances in conversations, such as sarcasm, humor, and teasing. Adjust what you say in accordance to feedback from others. Technical stuff. Sympathy and empathy are often used interchangeably, but they have very different meanings. Sympathy occurs when you share a feeling of caring or concern for an individual or even a group of people. For example, you may sympathize with the plight of the homeless. Empathy, on the other hand, involves being able to imagine yourself in another person's situation. You may be empathetic because you experienced a similar event at some point in your life, or because you can truly put yourself in someone else's shoes. Empathy appears to be an advanced thinking skill that varies among people. Some people simply seem to be naturally more empathetic than others. Projecting. Thinking others feel what you feel. People who have BPD develop strategies of coping that can turn out to be quite self-defeating in the long run. One of those coping methods involves taking their own painful, negative feelings or qualities and projecting them onto someone else. In doing so, they hope to avoid their bad feelings by giving them to another person. A few examples of projecting. To clarify the concept of projecting, here are a few examples of how people with BPD use projection as a way to cope with the pain of negative feelings. Connor believes that he's horribly out of shape and will never be fit enough. The thought of not having a good body terrifies him. He constantly nags his wife that she's out of shape and too fat. He yells at her when she buys occasional cookies for the kids. He uses projection to defend himself against his own painful body image. Kaylee is overwhelmed with rage after an argument with a coworker. She arrives home and tells her roommate what happened. Her roommate asks Kaylee if maybe she's overreacting a little. Kaylee tells her roommate to stay out of her business if all she can do is get angry and criticize. Kaylee misinterprets her roommate's question and sees it as criticism because of her own anger about the situation. Olivia's mother is frightened and worried when she stays out all night. One morning, when Olivia comes home, her mother is sitting in the kitchen and asks Olivia, "Where have you been? I was frantic with worry." Olivia screams at her mother, "Every time I stay out, you treat me like I'm a slut." Olivia sees her mother's sincere concern as highly judgmental and critical because she's ashamed of her own behavior. Connor, Kaylee, and Olivia feel bad about one of their personal qualities, poor body image, overreacting rage, and sexual looseness, respectively. Yet all three of them criticize others so that they don't have to deal with their own distress and shame. In doing so, people in relationships with them feel unfairly maligned and don't understand why they're always on the receiving end of critical barrages. Reducing occurrences of projecting. If you have a tendency to project your own emotions onto other people, you can reduce it with practice. However, you should combine your own efforts with work and therapy for maximum effectiveness. The process of decreasing projection begins with increasing your self-awareness, or honest observation and appraisal of your emotions. Look back at your past rocky interactions with others. Ask yourself whether you were accusing others of having feelings that mirrored how you were feeling about yourself. If so, you want to prevent this pattern from ruining or interfering with your current and future relationships. In addition, you want to tune in to your emotions, especially anger and rage. Try to notice your body's reactions, such as muscle tension in your chest, shoulders, or jaw, rapid heart rate, flushing, and sweating, that occur before you say something critical or before you attack someone else. When those physical feelings hit you, delay saying anything at all costs. Delaying your initial reaction may help you take a couple of slow, deep breaths instead of lashing out. After you delay your reaction, ask yourself a few questions. Could I be feeling upset with myself? Did something make me feel ashamed recently? Am I feeling afraid of something? Am I worried that someone is going to abandon me? If you answer yes to any of these questions, your anger is probably more about your own worries than the other person. Try to make one of the following alternative statements, or less provoking statements, instead of lashing out. I'm feeling emotional right now. I need to get back to you on this. Before we go further with this, I need to take a break. I've got some things to think about before I comment on this. I hear you, and I promise I'll discuss it with you when I'm feeling better. Tip: getting angry with others because of your own feelings of shame and rage at yourself is a long-standing habit. Changing such enduring patterns takes a lot of time and practice, not to mention effort. Give yourself some time, and don't expect instant results. Practicing perspective taking. Although not assuming that other people feel what you feel about yourself is an important skill to master, perspective taking also requires you to know how to understand other people's states of minds. In other words, their thoughts and feelings. In the following sections, we take a look at a few strategies for working on this skill. Taking turns. When emotions run hot, the intensity of distress tends to consume all your focus and attention. And unfortunately, emotions frequently run hot in people with BPD. Think of the brain as having only so much room. When filled with emotion, thinking skills are overwhelmed. At such times, The temptation to talk on and on to whomever will listen about whatever you're feeling is hard to fight. But if you give in to that temptation, you likely miss seeing that the person you're talking to is becoming restless, bored, and/or burned out. One way to fight this temptation is to work on forcing yourself to take turns in most, if not all, of your conversations. Just as parents teach their kids to share and take turns, you need to teach yourself to take turns when you converse with other people. In the process, you're likely to learn a lot about what the person you're talking to is thinking and feeling. Tip: a good rule of thumb is to try to take up half of the conversation time and to let the person you're conversing with take up the other half. Asking a lot of questions can help you accomplish this goal, and we cover this strategy in the next section. Asking questions. When you show interest in other people, they're much more likely to feel interested in you. Not only do questions keep conversations flowing, but they also help you show the person you're talking to that you're interested in him and the topic at hand. You can then use the answers to your questions to infer what the other person may be thinking. When you ask questions, try to listen carefully to the answers. Consider following up the answer with another question related to what you heard. Again, doing so keeps the conversation going and maintains interest in both parties. See the listening section later in this chapter for more thoughts about this issue. Tip: when people answer your questions, try not to see their intentions as malicious, and do your best to hold back your defensive responses. Check out the Decreasing Defensiveness section for more information about this issue. Perhaps you're wondering what kinds of questions to ask people you're talking to. Although almost any question can be helpful, we realize that you may want a few examples to build on. The following list, though far from exhaustive, is applicable to many different situations. Can you tell me more about that? Shrinks love asking this one. How did you learn about that? Is this something you feel strongly about? How do you feel about this issue? Tell me something about yourself. Okay, this one isn't exactly a question, but it accomplishes the same goal. Have you ever run into something like this in your life? How do you handle this kind of thing? Remember, work hard to ask your questions in a gentle, inquisitive tone. Avoid any hint of sarcasm or accusatory slant. Failing to do so can defeat the purpose of helping you develop and maintain relationships. Considering alternative meanings and motivations. People with BPD tend to misconstrue the meanings and intentions of other people's words. All too often, they infer malicious, attacking intentions from the words of others. This misinterpretation is known as the malicious assumption. After you make a malicious assumption, a counterattack is virtually inevitable. Work with your therapist to review some of your past conversations that turned out badly. Your therapist can help you develop less malicious and judgmental interpretations that are, as a matter of fact, more likely to be correct. If you find yourself making malicious assumptions, you're likely to have a lot of negative interactions. These assumptions not only make you unhappy, but they also add to the stress in your life. In addition, malicious assumptions take a toll on the quality of all your relationships. Tip: occasionally, malicious assumptions prove to be true. In other words, sometimes people really are expressing hostility. However, you have nothing to lose by believing in the non-judgmental assumptions. More often than not, your non-judgmental assumption is right, and by holding back your malicious assumption, thus avoiding a counterattack, you avoid turning an innocent conversation into an argumentative debacle. Not to mention, you can maintain or improve your relationships too. Bridget's story illustrates the reflexive tendency many people with BPD have to make malicious assumptions about other people's motivations. If you tend to make malicious assumptions, taking some time to think through your past heated conversations, like Bridget does with her therapist, can help you identify more realistic and positive, non-judgmental assumptions. Bridget sees Dr. Rodriguez twice a week for therapy. She's currently working on improving her ability to understand other people. She tells Dr. Rodriguez about an incident she had with a friend last week. "So my friend calls me and asks me if I want to go shopping," Bridget explains. "I tell her, yeah, but not today. And my friend says that she'll go without me. So that made me mad. Like, if I don't do what she wants, when she wants, she's just going to dump me. I told her, fine. Find another friend to go shopping with. Then she seemed surprised that I got mad and asked me what was wrong with me. So not only does she dump me, but she tells me I'm crazy, too. I don't get it. Why are people so mean to me?" Bridget, let's use what you just told me to practice taking another person's point of view. First, your friend asked you to go shopping. Tell me what she may have meant by that, Dr. Rodriguez gently inquires. "Well, that's easy. She wanted someone to go shopping with her," Bridget responds. "What did that invitation tell you about how she feels about you?" "I guess that meant she wanted me to go shopping." Dr. Rodriguez probes further. "Do you think she was saying that she wants your company? Does she like you?" Bridget replies, "Yeah, she wanted to spend time with me. And I suppose that means she likes me. I never really thought about that." "So next you tell her that you can't go, and she says that she'll go without you. What did that mean?" "That meant that she didn't care about me," Bridget responds. "Really? Is there any other reason why she may have said that?" Dr. Rodriguez asks. "I don't know. I guess she could have meant that she needed to go shopping that day." "Right. Like you have pointed out a million times before, maybe it didn't have anything to do with not liking me. But she had no right to call me crazy," Dr. Rodriguez says. "I'm not sure I heard when she said you're crazy. You said she asked what was wrong with you. Could she have been trying to convey any other meaning?" "None that I can think of. She was being really rude." "Well," Dr. Rodriguez continues, "is it possible that she was expressing frustration with you? In other words, could she have been flustered and upset by your anger and simply didn't know what to make of it? Was she necessarily saying that you're crazy?" Bridget hesitates and says, "I suppose that's possible. You have pointed out that I tend to see the worst possible meaning in what people say. You really think she was just frustrated with me?" "Yes, I really do. You went from a conversation about shopping to accusing her of abandoning you over nothing. This assumption makes perfect sense to you because being abandoned is one of your core fears. But other people don't understand how sensitive that issue is for you." Bridget reflects a moment and says, "Wow, you've given me a lot to think about." Bridget misinterpreted her friend's meaning, and this misinterpretation led her to accuse her friend of wanting to end their relationship. When her friend asked Bridget, "What's wrong?" she believed her friend was calling her crazy. Her therapist helps her see the other, more realistic ways she could have interpreted the conversation. Like Bridget, people with BPD are often reasonably good at reading others, but they greatly magnify the negativity in most conversations. If a statement can be taken negatively, they take it that way. People with BPD see even neutral comments as being tinged with hostility. Remember, feelings, even strong negative feelings, are neither good nor bad. You have the right to feel what you feel. What matters is how you act on your feelings. Noticing your impact on others. People with BPD commonly don't fully appreciate or even recognize how their behavior affects the people who care about them. Because their own overwhelming emotions consume their attention, they don't attend carefully to other people's reactions. These communication breakdowns are part of the expression, disconnection, rejection cycle, which starts when people with BPD overly focus on expressing their own emotions and concerns. As their conversations wear on, other people feel a lack of connection with them, and as a result, they may ultimately reject the people with BPD. Indeed, if you have BPD, you run a high risk of rejection from other people. We won't pull any punches here. However, the reason for this rejection isn't because you're an awful person. It's because you may not understand how your behavior or words affect other people. Tip: One way to start understanding your impact on other people is to start looking at people's faces. Practice noticing different expressions. See whether or not you can figure out the difference in facial expressions when people are tired, bored, irritated, enthusiastic, sad, neutral, happy, and truly angry. Also, pay attention to other people's voice tones and gestures. Begin this practice with people who are talking to other people, and then apply your skills to people who are talking to you. Although realizing your impact on other people is an important step in achieving your overall goal of better understanding other people, you also need to work on reducing defensiveness. If you're not sure what defensiveness means, listen to the next section. Decreasing defensiveness. Defensiveness refers to the habit of warding off perceived attacks, assaults, and criticisms with retaliatory statements. We aren't talking about physical attacks here. Rather, we're talking about the times when you perceive other people as being critical of you. People with BPD often react to these imagined assaults by counterattacking, which can be blaming others or turning up the heat on the conversation by lacing your words with sarcasm or hostility. Remember that anybody who's feeling intense anger is far less able to think or perceive interactions accurately than someone who's feeling calm and relaxed. The responses of people who are intensely angry are inappropriate 99.2% of the time. Well, we made that number up, but you get the point. When you're mad, your thinking skills just aren't at full capacity. The following three strategies can help you combat defensiveness. Taking the I out of interactions. Defensive people focus their attention on themselves. They don't necessarily believe they're better or more important than others, but they do believe, in a sense, that the world revolves around them. In other words, they're constantly in the spotlight. But that spotlight can shine much too brightly. Consider that when everything in life has personal significance, all the good and bad things that happen affect your feelings and moods. Taking things too personally is a common communication problem, especially for people with personality disorders, including BPD. Here are a few examples of this problem in action. A patron at a restaurant becomes furious when she has to wait for service because a couple of the wait staff called in sick and there aren't enough waiters available for the crowd. She's so rude to her waiter that others at her table are embarrassed. The waiter apologizes and explains that they're short-staffed, but the patron refuses to accept the apology. Instead, she feels that the restaurant is somehow singling her out for bad treatment. A driver becomes infuriated when a train crossing delays his commute to work. His blood pressure rises as he watches the train pass by in front of him. He wonders why trains always seem to interrupt his commute when he's already late. An ER physician calls a neurologist to schedule a consultation with him and becomes sarcastic and enraged when the neurologist asks a few questions about the patient before scheduling the meeting. The ER doctor feels personally insulted by the neurologist's failure to jump into his car and come to the ER without questioning the doctor's judgment. A man becomes enraged after his computer keyboard stops working. After getting a replacement, his anger interferes with his ability to get back to work. He believes that computer problems happen to him far more often than they should. The key problem in all four examples is that each person believes that the incident somehow has a negative, personal meaning. Even random events like computer breakdowns and train crossings become personal. If you tend to personalize events like the people in these examples do, it's time to work on this issue. The following steps can help. 1. Slow down and take 2 or 3 slow, deep breaths. 2. Ask yourself whether the irritating event is truly centered on you or whether it's possibly just circumstances or bad luck. 3. Ask yourself whether getting upset and angry will have some benefit for you. 4. Ponder whether your anger could hurt someone around you, or yourself, for that matter. 5. Consider telling yourself, "Stuff happens. Not everything is about me." Putting a friend on your side. Some of our patients over the years have found our second technique to be surprisingly useful in defeating defensiveness. This technique asks you to imagine an objective observer sitting on your shoulder to provide you with sage advice and guidance in a clutch. Your observer's task is to notice when you're feeling irritated, angry, or threatened. At those times, your observer should offer you some helpful advice, such as the following. Slow down. You're going to make things much worse if you speak right now. What do you have to lose by assuming that he's not attacking you? Let's try something different from the usual blow-up this time, okay? I'm here to help, remember? Say something positive instead. How many times has exploding helped the situation? What is he going to think and feel if you say this? How would you feel if someone said that to you? How about you actually try complimenting him instead of ripping him apart like you want to? After listening to your objective observer's advice, work hard to follow it. This technique can really help you if you practice it. It's not likely to work well the first few times you try it, but over time, you'll hear these calming words coming from the observer more and more often. Tip: some people jot down the preceding phrases on an index card and read them every day to remind their objective observer to use them when things start to deteriorate. Musing over diffusing. A great alternative to becoming defensive is called diffusing. When you perceive someone as being critical of you, diffusing can keep things calm instead of encouraging escalation. Diffusing involves doing the opposite of what you feel like doing. Instead of counterattacking, you try to find some sliver of truth in what the other person has just said to you. When you express actual agreement of a small part, sometimes even all, of what someone has said, you keep the dialogue going and gradually let out the steam from the conversational pressure cooker that may have been ready to explode. To clarify, diffusing doesn't mean capitulating or lying to the person you're talking with. Instead, diffusing represents an honest attempt to find something about the other person's perspective that you can truly endorse. However, you can use diffusing when you're not certain your perception is correct. Warning: diffusing isn't the way to deal with clear-cut, egregious verbal or physical abuse. If you're in that kind of situation, you need to seek help from your therapist, a shelter for domestic violence, or, in violent situations, from the police. Sometimes people don't know for sure whether they're being abused. If that situation fits you, a trip to a mental health professional can help you sort it out. Getting along better. People with BPD often lack sufficient social skills to maintain and nourish good interpersonal relationships. Loss and conflict often characterize their romantic lives. This section describes some basic ways to improve social interactions. If you have BPD, we recommend that you practice the following skills with acquaintances or friends. Try to increase your interpersonal skills with people you don't have intense relationships with before you attempt to work on more intimate relationships. Expect that these strategies will feel somewhat awkward and uncomfortable at first. However, with a little practice, you'll likely find that they become second nature. Listening. Listening to others not only conveys interest, but also helps develop your perspective-taking skills. Listening is both a skill and a habit that you have to nurture. With practice, listening becomes natural. You may think you're already a good listener. If so, you may not need to work on this issue. But before you make that decision, consider asking some people whether they think you could improve your listening skills. If they say yes, try to avoid becoming defensive. Giving compliments. Giving compliments not only makes other people feel better, but also increases your own self-confidence. You will gain confidence when people respond positively to your efforts. Make it a goal to give out at least 2 compliments each day. We predict that you'll find this practice fulfilling and worthwhile. Follow these guidelines when giving compliments. Be specific. Don't make grand global statements like, "You're the best person in the whole world," because most people won't believe you. Instead, find something smaller and more concrete, like, "I loved the way you handled that sales meeting," or, "This dinner is delicious." Don't throw in negatives with the positives. For example, don't say, "I loved the way you handled that sales meeting, especially after the horrible job you did last week," or, "This dinner is delicious. I wish you could cook like this every night." If you haven't given compliments in a while, other people may react strangely at first. They may wonder what you're up to and perhaps even become a little sarcastic. However, we recommend that you keep trying. Over time, they'll get used to the new you, and they'll likely respond quite well to the change. Pillowing rather than pillorying. People with BPD often report difficulty in getting their needs met by other people. They complain that others don't hear them or that they don't feel comfortable asking directly for what they want. We have a strategy that may make getting your needs met a little easier. This technique is called pillowing, as opposed to pillorying. When you pillory someone, you dish out abuse, contempt, and ridicule. How likely are other people to listen and do what you want when you resort to pillorying? Not very. With pillowing, however, you soften the blow as much as you can, while still clearly stating what you want. You can accomplish pillowing by using some simple phrases. These phrases can help you point out that you're not the one and only owner of truth and wisdom in the world. In other words, they help you acknowledge that your point of view may be somewhat flawed. And, in truth, it always is, for all people, whether they have BPD or not. Here are some sample statements that can help you develop your pillowing technique. They can be very useful when you're trying to fill your needs or requests of other people. "I could be off base, but I was wondering whether what you said was intended to hurt me. Maybe I'm being overly sensitive, but I can't hear you when you use that tone of voice. I realize that this could be an annoying request, but I'm feeling so overwhelmed. Would you mind taking over for a little while? I could be wrong, but it feels like you're upset with me." Tip: you don't want to make excessive use of pillowing, because if you do, others will find it a bit contrived. But the technique does make expressing your needs easier to do. Statements like the preceding examples also help you feel like you're being less demanding of people. Furthermore, the technique makes hearing you an easier task for other people to accomplish. "Of course, we could be wrong about that,"